name of this show is A Thunder Perfect Mood. We are listening on WMFO Medford 91.5 FM. Nighttime Magic with DJ Marie Moon. And it is pretty magical. I'm glad to be here with you. Every week on Thunder Perfect Mood, I read something. We listen to some music. We spend some time outside of the present. This week is our fourth week reading Dune. It's a hot topic lately, but Dune is one of my all-time favorite novels and favorite sci-fi series, period. We are starting on page 158 on my copy, which has a black cover and a little strip of sand on the cover. Dune does not use chapter numbers, which is somewhat of a challenge, but just go with it. Just let it happen. Let's get started.
Leto stood in the foyer of his house, studying a note by the light of a single suspensor lamp. Dawn was yet a few hours away, and he felt his tiredness. A Fremen messenger had brought the note to the outer guard just now as the Duke arrived from his command post. The note read, "A column of smoke by day, a pillar of fire by night." There was no signature. "What does it mean?" he wondered. The messenger had gone without waiting for an answer and before he could be questioned. He had slipped into the night like some smoky shadow. Leto pushed the paper into a tunic pocket, thinking to show it to Hawat later. He brushed a lock of hair from his forehead, took a sighing breath. The anti-fatigue pills were beginning to wear thin. It had been a long 2 days since the dinner party, and longer than that since he had slept. On top of all the military problems, there'd been the disquieting session with Hawat, the report on his meeting with Jessica. Should I waken Jessica? He wondered. There's no reason to play the secrecy game with her any longer. Or is there? Blast and damn that Duncan Idaho. He shook his head. No, not Duncan. I was wrong not to take Jessica into my confidence from the first. I must do it now, before more damage is done. The decision made him feel better, and he hurried from the foyer, down through the great hall, down the passages, toward the family wing. At the turn where the passages split to the service area, he paused. A strange mewling came from somewhere down the service passage. Leto put his left hand to the switch on his shield belt, slipped his kindle into his right hand. The knife conveyed a sense of reassurance. That strange sound had sent a chill through him. Softly, the Duke moved down the service passage, cursing the inadequate illumination. The smallest of suspensors had been spaced about 8 meters apart along here and tuned to their dimmest level. The dark stone walls had swallowed the light. A dull blob stretching across the floor appeared out of the gloom ahead. Leto hesitated, almost activated his shield, but refrained because that would limit his movements, his hearing, and because the captured shipment of Lay's guns had left him filled with doubts. Silently, he moved toward the gray blob, saw that it was a human figure, a man face down on the stone. Leto turned him over with a foot, knife poised, bent close in the dim light to see the face. It was the smuggler, Tuek, a wet stain down his chest. The dead eyes stared with empty darkness. Leto touched the stain, warm. How could this man be dead here? Leto asked himself. Who killed him? The mewling sound was louder now. It came from ahead and down the side passage to the central room where they had installed the main shield generator for the house. Hand on belt switch, Kinjal poised. The Duke skirted the body, slipped down the passage, and peered around the corner toward the shield generator room. Another gray blob lay stretched on the floor a few paces away, and he saw at once this was the source of the noise. The shape crawled toward him with painful slowness, gasping, mumbling. Leto stilled his sudden constriction of fear, darted down the passage, crouched beside the crawling figure. It was Mapes, the Fremen housekeeper, her hair tumbled around her face, clothing disarrayed. A dull shininess of dark stain spread from her back along her side. He touched her shoulder, and she lifted herself on her elbows, head tipped up to peer at him, the eyes black-shadowed emptiness.
You, she gasped. Killed. Guard. Sent. Get. Tuic. Escape. Lady. You. You here. No.
She flopped forward, her head thumping against the stone. Leto felt for a pulse at the temples. There was none. He looked at the stain. She'd been stabbed in the back. Who?
His the backstabbers. Backstabbers. They smiling in your face. All the time they want to take your place. The backstabbers. Backstabbers. All you fellas who have someone and you really care. Yeah. Yeah. Then it's all.
The drug on the dart is selective, Yue said. You can speak, but I'd advise against it. He glanced down the hall, and again bent over Leto, pulled out the dart, tossed it aside. The sound of the dart clattering on the stones was faint and distant to the Duke's ears.
It can't be Yue, Leto thought. He's conditioned.
How?
Leto whispered.
I'm sorry, my dear Duke. But there are things which will make greater demands than this.
He touched the diamond tattoo on his forehead.
I find it very strange myself, an override on my pyretic conscience. But I wish to kill a man. Yes, I actually wish it. I will stop at nothing to do it.
He looked down at the Duke.
Oh no, not you, my dear Duke. The Baron Harkonnen. I wish to kill the Baron.
Baron. Har,
be quiet, Please, my poor Duke, you haven't much time. That pig tooth I put in your mouth after the tumble at Narcall, that tooth must be replaced. In a moment, I'll render you unconscious and replace that tooth. He opened his hand, stared at something in it. An exact duplicate, its core shaped most exquisitely like a nerve. It'll escape the usual detectors, even a fast scanning. But if you bite down hard on it, the cover crushes. Then, when you expel your breath sharply, you fill the air around you with a poison gas, most deadly. Leto stared up at Yue, seeing madness in the man's eyes, perspiration along brow and chin. You were dead anyway, my poor Duke, Yue said. But you will get close to the Baron before you die. He'll believe you're stupefied by drugs beyond any dying effort to attack him. And you will be drugged and tied. But attack can take strange forms, and you will remember the tooth. The tooth, Duke Leto Atreides. You will remember the tooth. The old doctor leaned closer and closer until his face and drooping mustache dominated Leto's narrowing vision. The tooth, Yue muttered. Why? Leto whispered. Yue lowered himself to one knee beside the Duke. I made a Shaiten's bargain with the Baron, and I must be certain he has fulfilled his half of it. When I see him, I'll know. When I look at the Baron, then I will know. But I'll never enter his presence without the price. You're the price, my poor Duke. And I'll know when I see him. My poor Wana taught me many things, and one is to see certainty of truth when the stress is great. I cannot do it always, but when I see the Baron, then I will know. Leto tried to look down at the tooth in Yue's hand. He felt this was happening in a nightmare. It could not be. Yue's purple lips turned up in a grimace. I'll not get close enough to the Baron, or I'd do this myself. No, I'll be detained at a safe distance. But you, ah now, you, my lovely weapon. He'll want you close to him, to gloat over you, to boast a little. Leto found himself almost hypnotized by a muscle on the left side of Yue's jaw. The muscle twisted when the man spoke. Yue leaned closer. And you, my good Duke, my precious Duke, you must remember this tooth. He held it up between thumb and forefinger. It will be all that remains to you. Leto's mouth moved without sound, then refuse. Ah, no. You mustn't refuse, because in return for this small service, I'm doing a thing for you. I will save your son and your woman. No other can do it. They can be removed to a place where no Harkonnen can reach them.
How save them?
Leto whispered. By making it appear they're dead. By secreting them among the people who draw knife at hearing the Harkonnen name, who hate the Harkonnen so much they'll burn a chair in which a Harkonnen has sat, salt the ground over which a Harkonnen has walked. He touched Leto's jaw. Can you feel anything in your jaw? The Duke found that he could not answer. He sensed distant tugging, saw Yue's hand come up with the ducal signet ring. For Paul, Yue said. You'll be unconscious presently. Goodbye, my poor Duke. When next we meet, we'll have no time for conversation.
Cool remoteness spread upward from Leto's jaw, across his cheeks. The shadowy hall narrowed to a pinpoint with Yue's purple lips centered in it. Remember the tooth, Yue hissed. The tooth! Thank you.
listening to A Mountain for President by Principles of Geometry, the Joaquim remix, apologies for all phonetic readings of words that don't look like potato to me. Backstabbers by the OJs was before that. Diner Walk by the Octopus Project. Interlude by La Femme. Trad Velocito by Casino vs. Japan. And we started this evening by The World is Going Up in Flames by Charles Bradley. Foreshadowing. This is a Thunder Perfect Mood. I am Marie Moon. We are reading Dune this evening. It's fun. I like it. Have you seen the new movie? Have you seen the new film? What are your thoughts? What are your opinions? You should let me know them. You can call 855-915-9636, or you can tweet at me on twitter.com. I am Marie Moon, WMFO, M-A-R-I-E, Moon, WMFO. We continue.
You're
Jessica awoke in the dark, feeling premonition in the stillness around her. She could not understand why her mind and body felt so sluggish. Skin raspings of fear ran along her nerves. She thought of sitting up and turning on a light, but something stayed the decision. Her mouth felt strange. It was a dull sound, directionless in the dark, somewhere. The waiting moment was packed with time, with rustling needle-stick movements. She began to feel her body, grew aware of the bindings on wrists and ankles, a gag in her mouth. She was on her side, hands tied behind her. She tested the bindings, realized they were crimscale fiber and would only claw tighter as she pulled. And now she remembered. There had been movement in the darkness of her bedroom. Something wet and pungent slapped against her face, filling her mouth, hands grasping for her. She had gasped, one indrawn breath, sensing the narcotic in the wetness. Consciousness had receded, sinking her into a black bin of terror. It has come, she thought. How simple it was to subdue the Bene Gesserit. All it took was treachery. Hawat was right. She forced herself not to pull on her bindings. This is not my bedroom, she thought. They've taken me someplace else. Slowly, she marshaled the inner calmness. She grew aware of the smell of her own stale sweat with its infusion of chemical fear. Where is Paul? She asked herself. My son, what have they done to him? Calmness. She forced herself to it, using the ancient routines. But terror remained so near. Leto. Where are you, Leto? She sensed a diminishing in the dark. It began with shadows. Dimensions separated, became new thorns of awareness. White. A line under a door. I'm on the floor. People walking. She sensed it through the floor. Jessica squeezed back the memory of terror. I must remain calm, alert, and prepared. I may only get one chance. Again, she forced the inner calmness. The ungainly thumping of her heartbeats evened, shaping out time. She counted back. I was unconscious about an hour. She closed her eyes, focused her awareness onto the approaching footsteps. Four people. She counted the differences in their steps. I must pretend I'm still unconscious. She relaxed against the cold floor, testing her body's readiness. Heard a door open, sensed increased light through her eyelids. Feet approached, someone standing over her. You are awake, rumbled a basso voice. Do not pretend. She opened her eyes. The Baron Vladimir Harkonnen stood over her. Around them, she recognized the cellar room where Paul had slept, saw his cot at one side, empty. Suspensor lamps were brought in by guards, distributed near the open door. There was a glare of light in the hallway beyond that hurt her eyes. She looked up at the Baron. He wore a yellow cape that bulged over his portable suspensors. The fat cheeks were two cherubic mounds beneath spider-black eyes. The drug was timed, he rumbled. We knew to the minute when you'd be coming out of it. How could that be, she wondered. They'd have to know my exact weight, my metabolism, my... UA! Such a pity you must remain gagged, the Baron said. We could have such an interesting conversation. UA is the only one it could be, she thought. How? The Baron glanced behind him at the door. Come in, Peter. Baron knows I could use the voice on any other man. Scarface looked at Peter. We've the boy on a litter outside. What are your orders? Peter spoke to Jessica. I'd thought of binding you by a threat held over your son, but I begin to see that would have not worked. I let emotion cloud reason. Bad policy for a mentat. He looked at the first pair of troopers, turning so the deaf one could read his lips. Take them into the desert, as the traitor suggested, for the boy. His plan is a good one. The worms will destroy all evidence. Their bodies must never be found.
You don't wish to dispatch them yourself?
Scarface asked. He reads lips, Jessica thought.
I follow my baron's example, Peter said. Take them where the traitor said.
Jessica heard the harsh mentat control in Peter's voice, thought, he too fears the truthsayer. Peter shrugged, turned, and went through the doorway. He hesitated there, and Jessica thought he might turn back for a last look at her, but he went on without turning.
Me? I wouldn't like the thought of facing that truthsayer after this night's work, Scarface said. You ain't likely ever to run into that old witch, one of the other troopers said.
He went around to Jessica's head, bent over her.
It ain't getting our work done standing around here chattering. Take her feet and... Why'd we kill him here?
Scarface asked.
Too messy, the first one said. Unless he wants to strangle him.
Me, I like a nice straightforward job. Drop him in the desert, like the traitor said. Cut him once or twice, leave the evidence for the worms. Nothing to clean up afterwards.
Yeah, well, I guess you're right, Scarface said.
Jessica listened to them, watching, registering. But the gag blocked her voice, and there was a deaf one to consider. Scarface holstered his laser gun, took her feet. They lifted her like a sack of grain, maneuvered her through the door, and dumped her onto the suspensor buoyed litter with another bound figure. As they turned her, fitting her to the litter, she saw her companion's face. Paul! He was bound, but not gagged. His face was no more than 10 centimeters from hers, eyes closed, his breathing even. Is he drugged? She wondered. The troopers lifted the litter, and Paul's eyes opened the smallest fraction, dark slits staring at her. He mustn't try the voice, she prayed. The deaf guard. Paul's eyes closed. He had been practicing the awareness breathing, calming his mind, listening to their captors. The deaf one posed a problem, but Paul contained his despair. The mind-calming Bene Gesserit regimen his mother had taught him kept him poised, ready to expand any opportunity. Paul allowed himself another slit-eyed inspection of his mother's face. She appeared unharmed, gagged, though. He wondered who could have captured her. His own captivity was plain enough. To bed with a capsule prescribed by Yue, awakened to find himself bound to this litter. Perhaps a similar thing had befallen her. Logic said the traitor was Yue, but he held final decision in abeyance. There was no understanding it. A Sook doctor, a traitor. The litter tipped slightly as the Harkonnen troopers maneuvered it through a doorway into the starlit night. A suspensor buoy rasped against the doorway. Then they were on sand, feet grating in it. A thopter wing loomed overhead, blotting the stars. The litter settled to the ground. Paul's eyes adjusted to the faint light. He recognized the deaf trooper as the man who opened the thopter door, peered inside at the green gloom illuminated by the instrument panel. "This the thopter we're supposed to use?" he asked, and turned to watch his companion's lips. "It's the one the traitor said was fixed for desert work," the other said. Scarface nodded.
"But it's one of them little liaison jobs. Ain't room in there for more than them and two of us."
"Two's enough," said the litter bearer, moving up close and presenting his lips for reading. "We can take care of it from here on, Kinnett."
"The Baron told me to make sure what happened to them too."
"What are you so worried about?" asked another trooper from behind the litter bearer.
"She is a Bene Gesserit witch," the deaf one said. "They have powers."
"Ah," the litter bearer made the sign of the fist at his ear.
"One of them, eh? Know what you mean."
The trooper behind him grunted. She'll be worm meat soon enough. Don't suppose even a Bene Gesserit witch has powers over them big worms. Eh, Zygo? He nudged the litter bearer.
Yep, the litter bearer said.
He returned to the litter, took Jessica's shoulders.
Come on, Kinette. You can go along if you want to make sure what happens.
It's nice of you to invite me, Zygo, Scarface said. Jessica felt herself lifted, the wing shadow spinning. Stars. She was pushed into the rear of the thopter, her crimscale fiber bindings examined, and she was strapped down. Paul was jammed in beside her, strapped securely, and she noted his bonds were simple rope. Scarface, the deaf one they called Kinnett, took his place in front. The litter bearer, the one they called Zygo, came around and took the other front seat. Kinnett closed his door, bent to the controls. The thopter took off in a wing-tuck surge, headed south over the shield wall. Zygo tapped his companion's shoulder and said,
"Why don't you turn around and keep an eye on them, too?"
"Sure you know the way to go?" Kinnett watched Zygo's lips.
"I listen to the traitor, same's you."
Kinnett swiveled his seat. Jessica saw the glint of starlight on a laser gun in his hand. The thopter's light-walled interior seemed to collect illumination as her eyes adjusted, but the guard's scarred face remained dim. Jessica tested her seatbelt, found it loose. She felt roughness in the strap against her left arm, realized the strap had been almost severed and would snap at a sudden jerk.
"Has someone been at this thopter, preparing it for us?" she wondered. "Who?"
Slowly, she twisted her bound feet clear of Paul's.
"Sure do seem ashamed to waste a good-looking woman like this," Scarface said. "You ever had any highborn types?" He turned to look up at the pilot.
"Bene Gesserit ain't all highborn," the pilot said.
"But they all looks Heidi."
"He can see me plain enough," Jessica thought. She brought her bound legs up onto the seat, curled into a sinuous ball, staring at Scarface.
"Real pretty she is," Kinnett said.
He wet his lips with his tongue.
"Sure do seem a shame," he looked at Zygo. "You thinking what I think you're thinking?" the pilot asked.
Polished glass of your soul through the darkness and the light. 'Cause I
Who'd be to know? The guard asked. Afterward, he shrugged. I just never had me no highborns. Might never get another chance like this one.
You lay a hand on my mother, Paul grated. He glared at Scarface.
Hey, the pilot laughed. Cub's got a bark. Ain't got no bite, though.
And Jessica thought, Paul's pitching his voice too high. It may work, though. They flew on in silence. Those poor fools, Jessica thought, studying her guards and reviewing the Baron's words. They'll be killed as soon as they report success on their mission. The Baron wants no witnesses. The Thopter banked over the southern rim of the shield wall, and Jessica saw a moon-shadowed expanse of sand beneath them.
This ought to be far enough, the pilot said. The traitor said to put him on the sand anywhere near the shield wall.
He dipped the craft toward the dunes in a long falling stoop, brought it up stiffly over the desert surface. Jessica saw Paul begin to take the rhythmic breathing of the calming exercise. He closed his eyes, opened them. Jessica stared, helpless to aid him. He hasn't mastered the voice yet, she thought. If he fails... The Thopter touched sand with a soft lurch, and Jessica, looking north back across the shield wall, saw a shadow of wings settle out of sight up there.
Someone's following us, she thought. Who?
Then, the ones the Baron set to watch this pair. And there'll be watchers for the watchers, too. Zygo shut off the wing rotors. Silence flooded in upon them. Jessica turned her head. She could see out the window beyond Scarface a dim glow of light from a rising moon, a frosted rim of rock rising from the desert. Sandblast ridges streaked its sides. Paul cleared his throat. The pilot said,
Now, Kinnett?
I don't know, Zygo.
Zygo turned, said,
Ah, look. He reached out for Jessica's skirt.
Remove her gag,
Paul commanded. Jessica felt the words rolling in the air. The tone, the timbre, excellent. Imperative, very sharp. A slightly lower pitch would have been better, but it still could fall within this man's spectrum. Zygo shifted his hand up the band around Jessica's mouth, slipped the knot on the gag.
Stop that, Kinnett ordered.
Shut your trap, Zygo said. Her hands are tied.
He freed the knot and the binding dropped. His eyes glittered. Kinnett put a hand on the pilot's arm.
Look, Zygo, no need to...
Jessica twisted her neck, spat out the gag. She pitched her voice in low, intimate tones.
Gentlemen, no need to fight over me.
At the same time, she writhed sinuously for Kinnett's benefit. She saw them grow tense, knowing that in this instant they were convinced on the need to fight over her. Their disagreement required no other reason. In their minds, they were fighting over her. She held her face high in the instrument glow to be sure Kinnett would read her lips and said,
You mustn't disagree.
They drew farther apart, glanced warily at each other.
Is any woman worth fighting over? She asked.
By uttering the words, by being there, she made herself infinitely worth their fighting. Paul clamped his lips tightly closed, forced himself to be silent. There had been the one chance for him to succeed with the voice. Now, everything depended on his mother, whose experience went so far beyond his own.
Yeah, Scarface said. No need to fight over.
His hand flashed toward the pilot's neck. The blow was met by a splash of metal that caught the arm, and in the same motion slammed into Kinnett's chest. Scarface groaned, sagged backwards against the door.
Thought I was some dummy didn't know that trick, Zygo said.
He brought back his hand, revealing the knife. It glittered in reflected moonlight.
Now for the cub, he said, and leaned toward Paul.
No need for that.
Jessica murmured. Psycho hesitated. Wouldn't you rather have me cooperative? Jessica asked. Give the boy a chance. Her lip curled in a sneer. Little enough chance he'd have out there in that sand. Give him that, and she smiled. You could find yourself well rewarded.
Psycho glanced left, right, returned his attention to Jessica.
I've heard me what can happen to a man in this desert, he said. Boy might find the knife of kindness.
Is it so much, I ask? Jessica pleaded.
You're trying to trick me, Psycho muttered.
I don't want to see my son die, Jessica said. Is that a trick?
Psycho moved back, elbowed the door latch. He grabbed Paul, dragged him across the seat, pushed him half out the door, and held the knife posed.
What'll you do, cub, if I cut your bonds?
You'll leave here immediately and head for those rocks, Jessica said.
Is that what you'll do, cub?
Psycho asked.
Paul's voice was properly surly.
Yes.
The knife moved down, slashed the bindings of his legs. Paul felt the hand on his back to hurl himself down onto the sand, feigned a lurch against the doorframe for purchase, turned as though to catch himself, lashed out with his right foot. The toe was aimed with a precision that did credit to his long years of training, as though all of that training focused on this instant. Almost every muscle of his body cooperated in the placement of it. The tip struck the soft part of Saigo's abdomen just below the sternum, slammed upward with terrible force over the liver and through the diaphragm to crush the right ventricle of the man's heart. With one gurgling scream, the guard jerked backward across the seats. Paul, unable to use his hands, continued his tumble onto the sand, landing with a roll that took up the force and brought him back to his feet in one motion. He dove back into the cabin, found the knife, and held it in his teeth while his mother sawed her bonds. She took the blade and freed his hands.
I could have handled him, she said. He'd have had to cut my bindings. That was a foolish risk.
I saw the opening and used it, he said. She heard the harsh control in his voice, said,
Yue's house sign is scrawled on the ceiling of this cabin.
He looked up and saw the curling symbol.
Get out and let us study this craft, she said. There's a bundle under the pilot's seat. I felt it when we got in.
A bomb?
Doubt it. There's something peculiar here.
Paul leaped out to the sand and Jessica followed. She turned, reached under the seat for the strange bundle, seeing Saigo's feet close to his face, feeling dampness on the bundle as she removed it, realizing the dampness was the pilot's blood.
Waste of moisture, she thought, knowing that this was Arakeen thinking.
Paul stared around them, saw the rock scarp lifting out of the desert like a beach rising from the sea, wind-carved palisades beyond. He turned back as his mother lifted the bundle from the thopter, saw her stare across the dunes toward the shield wall. He looked to see what drew her attention, saw another thopter swooping toward them, realized they'd not have time to clear the bodies out of this thopter and escape.
Run, Paul, Jessica shouted. It's Harkonnen's.
Zootime, is she a new time? The mammals are your favorite time. You're by the water tonight. Heartbeat, increase the heartbeat. You hear the thunder of stampeding rhinos, elephants, and tacky tigers. This storm ain't big enough for the both of us. Keep
This town ain't big enough for the both of us, by Sparks. Before that, the sun will rise, yet we won't be here, by Hainali. Dark stains by exploded view. Vladimir Martinov's Schubert Quintet, unfinished, movement 1, played by the Kronos Quartet. Yes. And before that was Finger Pies by Annika, a Berlin-based singer who is also the singer in Exploded View, which we heard earlier. Finger Pies is her first single out as her solo self in 8 years. That was Dune, part 4. I'm enjoying this. I hope you are. You are listening to A Thunder Perfect Mood here on WMFO Medford 91.5 FM. I am Marie Moon. Next week, we will pick up again, beginning part 2, Muad'Dib. It begins with, when my father, the Padishah Emperor, heard of Duke Leto's death and the manner of it. I mean, a little hypocritical there, buddy. If you would like more details or to listen to past episodes, go to thunderperfectmood.com. We're always here for you, always listening. You can tweet at me at Marie Moon WMFO or call WMFO at 855-915-9636. I'm not really here. This is a remote show, but you can leave a message. We listen to all the messages. I hope you have things in your life to feel gratitude for today. Good night.
You'll find there's never any time for babes and wine. You lie, you never ever change and say bye. Thank you.
I think it's just vapor.
Vaping is safer than smoking, isn't it?
There's really not even that much nicotine in them, right?
One vape pod has as much nicotine as one pack of cigarettes.
My kid
knows it's dangerous.
5.4 million American kids vape, and most think it's harmless. Get your head out of the cloud. Talk to your kid about vaping. Visit talkaboutvaping.org. That's talkaboutvaping.org. Brought to you by the American Lung Association and the Ad Council.